Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to the 9th episode of Growth Marketing Today. Today, I have Peter Sum, the growth at OpenCare. After graduating from Western University, Peter ended up being a growth lead at Yukon Games and is currently a growth manager at OpenCare, one of the fastest growing startups here in Toronto. In this episode, you learn three things. First, why OpenCare spent $10,000. Yeah, you heard it right. $10,000 on surveying the population when it comes to behavior and health. Second, what frameworks did they use there at OpenCare to get actionable insights from tremendous data? Third, with such a focus on performance, LTV, metrics, how can marketers find balance with the creative brand side of marketing, which is much harder to measure? If you want the high-level outline and quotes from this episode, you can go to growthmarketing.today/009. Once again, that's growthmarketing.today/009 to get the outline and quotes from this episode. Ready? Here's my chat with Peter. Hey everyone, I have here Peter from OpenCare. I'm so excited to chat with him. I know he's been around in the growth scene. We actually worked in the same co-working space way back then.
111.
Yeah, 111, right? How's it going, Peter? How are you this afternoon?
Good. It's a sunny day, so...
You can't complain.
Yeah, can't complain while the weather's still around, yeah, so...
No, it's so good. I'm excited to chat with you because, like, before we started recording, is that you started talking already about growth and, like, can be a one-trick pony, right? But before we get into like OpenCare and what you think what growth is, maybe you can tell a little bit about like how you got to where you're at, because everybody in growth, like, they came from really weird backgrounds.
Yeah.
Maybe tell a little bit how you got where you're at right now.
Sure. So originally grew up in Vancouver, was a really good student in high school, and that didn't carry on to university, but I wanted to go into science. I was curious about science, had a lot of really good marks, which I guess pointed me in that direction. And so when I was looking for schools, wanted to kind of bridge science and business together. And so went around and looked at all the universities, ended up choosing Western.
Nice.
Got into the biomed program there with pre-acceptance into Ivy. And that's really kind of like where university started. But my exposure to entrepreneurship really started when I got involved with a student organization called Impact.
Nice.
So Impact was really big back in the day. And there was just this energy around startups and entrepreneurship. There was, you know, guys and students who would go off and start their own businesses. And so by the time I was sort of in second year, was involved with this organization and had a really great opportunity to go and work for Ray Chow, who was launching his business at the time. It was called Loose Button. And so it was my first startup experience, summer gig. I was just chilling at home in Vancouver, not doing anything. I was working at some sort of souvenir shop, just like making coffees or whatever. And Ray gives me a call. He's like, hey, you know, I'm starting my own business. Come work for me for free, but I'll teach you a lot and give you a lot of opportunity.
He didn't pay you.
No, but the learning itself was like, the way I looked at it, you know, it's like, you know, you pay for classes in school. This was like, you know, going to Toronto and taking a risk and getting exposed to startups. So I went there, and Loose Button was a great experience for a couple summers. Saw kind of the business transition and learned a lot about, you know, what really doesn't work, what does work, learned about e-commerce. I mean, Ray was really one of those guys that ultimately, you know, through his network, I was able to get my first job out of school. And so that was Yukon Games. It was a mobile game studio.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah. So Ray and Chris, I think, had crossed paths before. And so for me, university was sort of like that transition period. I went through so many different programs. I can't even. So in my first year, I was in biomed, had a girlfriend long distance, ended up, I think, really kind of having an impact on my marks. And so my marks like kind of went down. So I started transitioning through different programs. I was like, okay, well, I don't love science. Let's go into psychology for a year. So I did that. I was like, oh, I don't love this that much. So let's do music. So I went into music, spent a year in music, ultimately ended up with a business degree, somehow still graduated in 4 years. I think I was able to sweet talk the dean of the business program to graduate me. She's like, I don't want to deal with you anymore. So she graduated me. So if I was looking for work with my degree, I probably wouldn't have found that many opportunities. So fortuitously through, I think, Ray's network, I met with Chris, had an interview with him, and really kind of started full-time working in startups. And so I was working there initially as sort of, I guess, like a paid acquisition expert. So at the time, you know, mobile games was like just starting to take off. It was like that transition from social Facebook games over to mobile. Facebook advertising, Facebook mobile ads didn't exist yet. And so a lot of it was like partnering with different ad agencies and those types of things, and saw sort of that transition as like mobile really started to take off. Games started to make a ton of money. Really exciting time. I think mobile and games specifically in mobile were at the forefront of like tracking and measurement, predictive and analytics and all those types of things. So got exposed to that and really kind of had a lot of fun growing games. But then ultimately, I think for me, wanted to kind of enter into an industry where I guess it's a lot clearer the value that you're providing. You know, at the end of the day, I love games, but, you know, helping people with their health is something that's a little bit more clear in terms of impact that it can provide. Mm. And so came across Open Care. And I guess I've been here ever since. Wow. So, yeah, that's sort of been the path.
That's so cool. And was it through an introduction you got into Open Care, or you just applied through?
Open Care was cold. It was actually fortuitous that they just launched a posting. Eva at the time was, I guess, someone that I just found on LinkedIn, just found her email address, gave her an email, said, like, let's go for coffee, let's talk about
it.
Oh,
so you did, like, you reach out, you
it was one of those, like,
cold emails.
It's like, I hope it's Eva at opencare.com.
Sent exactly
an email,
what
there's
I
no, like, denied email or whatever, rejected email. So we met for coffee, and we had consecutive conversations. So Eva's like, let me introduce you to Nick, who's one of our founders. Nick's like, oh, I enjoyed our conversation, let me introduce you to Cam. And every conversation I had with these guys, you know, I was like, man, they're doing something really cool here. They're really thoughtful about how they're approaching their business, how they think about their business. And man, it's been really fun working here for the last 2 years. Nice. Coming in on 2 years.
Been a cool ride. I looked up your profile and I noticed you studied consumer behavior. I find like that's a super important part of maybe even doing ads, like understanding consumer. Yeah. Did you find that studying that helped you in any way? Or it was like, that's all
man.
Shit. I had to relearn everything.
I wish I played closer attention. I feel like, school version of me was not the best version of me. I think there's definitely, you know, if I go back in time and think about the time I had in school and what I was learning, I think there's a lot of like principles that I could have picked up along the way. But I think my style of learning was just much more like practical. Let's get into it. Let's start problem solving versus like take out a textbook and start reading it and memorizing things. So I think that was really what turned me away from school. And I think I had to relearn a lot of the fundamentals as I went into marketing and, you know, even just like doing proper research, understanding like why people behave the way they do. So I think my learning from, I guess, the last 3 years has really been driven through just like reading books on, you know, different types of like behavioral economics, all that type of stuff I find really interesting, not necessarily through the degree that I somehow patched together from 4 random years of school.
I find that's fascinating because I started my undergrad in physics.
Okay.
And then I went to biomedical. So I'm going to be a doctor. You know, it's like the Asian Filipino thing to do.
It's definitely
doctor.
Part of that. My sister was cell biology. So yeah. I was like, I need to go into science, do that thing.
And then I transitioned to like, I did get into music. I was like, oh, this is easy stuff. And then I ended up with a half-hacked math/computer science/something else degree.
Yeah.
I find that education's not preparing people in tech very well. Like it's like, you're right. It's like pure memorization. And you said something fascinating about more problem solving and contextual.
Yeah. I think the hard thing is that like the pace at which things are changing can't keep up with, you know, writing a textbook and throwing it into a class. So by the time you're learning it, everything's so different, right?
Right.
So like, you know, everyone talks about how like Facebook was a huge change in terms of like how people are running marketing these days. But I think like by the time that gets into a textbook and people are learning about it, it's just way too slow for those people to actually get any value about it, out of it. So
that's fascinating. And I know we're supposed to be talking about growth, but I find a lot of growth people are very focused on learning. So I'm curious what your learning process looks like. Do you do like, let's do books, podcasts, and a bunch of stuff and try to apply it to your work? Or are you more like targeted and say, I need to know this, so I'm going to Google and try to figure out which sources I should go first?
Yeah, I think my learning is heavily guided by what the business currently needs. And I think I've always been that way. It's sort of, you know, I have curiosity on topics outside of work, but work generally sort of guides me in terms of where I focus my learning. And I guess that's part of the value of like working at such a fast-paced company, is that the challenges that you're dealing with today are different than the challenges you're dealing with 6 months from now. So you're actually learning different things. You're not like stuck in one place learning the same thing over and over again. So with Open Care, for instance, at the beginning of this year, there was a lot of focus on brand and how do we build a brand and how do we go back to the fundamentals and talk to our customers and how do we explore different types of frameworks like, you know, jobs to be done and those types of things to really tease out the motivations behind why people do things. And so like that was super interesting to me and it was like my first introduction. We go and find advisors to kind of come in, plug into our company. And these people have done it for like big brands in the past and really hearing from the source versus like necessarily reading textbooks, right? So people who are actively doing it right away, I think that's a lot of value and it's sort of shifted. So brand was a focus. Now more recently, you know, we were heavily invested in sort of thinking about process and getting more organized as a team. And I think learning through necessity, sometimes that's sort of like my fuel to really understand things because, you know, there's real life applications and there's consequences if you don't learn it. And I think being put in that environment where there's really like you need to figure it out is a good environment for me to learn.
It's a good motivation. It's like we need this now. Like it's not like we need this 4 years later when I graduate, right? Right. That's fascinating. I know we've been chatting about Open Care, and for my listeners who don't know, can you give a little blurb about what Open Care is about and what they do, what problems they're solving for?
Sure. So Open Care is a marketplace that connects patients and healthcare providers. And so if you're looking for, let's say, a new dentist or a new chiropractor, a new doctor, you come to Open Care and we provide you with a very personalized experience. You come in, you answer a few questions, and we try and give you a recommendation that really fits your needs. And what's kind of powering that underneath the surface is a lot of data and information. And we collect a lot of review data and rating data to really make sure that the recommendations that we're making are high quality. But not only that, we're actually physically visiting these clinics and making sure that they meet a really high bar so that when we ultimately put you in touch with this person, we have high confidence that experience is going to be really great. Most recently, we've been focused heavily on sort of dentistry and growing the Toronto market. And so we've had, you know, a lot of ads running in Toronto for incentives and those types of things to really motivate people to be proactive about their health. And that's where we are today. And I think vision-wise, we've got grander aspirations, but that's sort of the current business.
Nice. And your role there is, I believe you're doing growth, the demand side, right?
Exactly. Customer-facing side. We've got patients on one side. We've got sort of healthcare providers on the other. So on the patient side, we're really focused on how do we get more and more people to go to a new dentist. What we found is that, you know, especially with healthcare, you think about the healthcare experience. A lot of times people really plug into healthcare when they have a pain or a need, when it's urgent, let's say a tooth falls out or let's say you like break a leg, you need to kind of go to the hospital. A lot of times you interact with healthcare in that framework where we're trying to turn that into much more of a preventive care, proactive care type of interaction where you're not just going when you have pain, you're going to really make sure that you have the healthiest body that you can, that you're being proactive, you're stopping the issue before it even happens, those types of things.
No, that's definitely awesome. I find myself, I only go to the doctor or the dentist when I feel the pain. It should be a little bit more preventive, right?
Well, to be fair, it's like you have all these childhood experiences of, you know, all these like metal in your mouth and all these negative memories and emotions. But dental care itself has really progressed. There's a lot better technology now. And again, we try and work with the best healthcare providers. So when people are going through, they're like, man, I never knew these types of experiences existed. I always thought of that childhood experience that I didn't enjoy. So we're seeing today that there's actually much better care and people are always amazed when they finally get in touch with it or interact with it.
Awesome. And then your role there is growth. What does that mean or look like in terms of the patient side?
Yep. So it's all about, I guess, motivating patients to want to go to the dentist. And so, you know, we took a look, we ran a lot of kind of surveys and tried to size Toronto specifically as a market, understood sort of how many people every month regularly go to the dentist, those types of things. And there's a huge market of people who have a need to go to the dentist, but they're not actively doing anything about it. I'm like case number one. I work at Open Care. I haven't gone to the dentist in a year and a half. I still haven't gone. And I'm supposed to be marketing to myself. I still haven't convinced myself to go. But I think there's a lot of people who are sort of, because of this belief that you only go when you have pain and emergencies and preventive care is almost harder for you to conceptualize the value, you end up, you know, putting it off and saying like, you know, I'll do it next week. I'll get around to doing it. It's not the most amazing experience,
right?
At least from a perception point of view. And so people put it off. And so our job is really like, how do we get people to want to go to the dentist today? And so that's where a lot of this incentive promotion stuff has come through, really trying to get down to the psychology. Like right now, we're still stuck on like extrinsic motivation of like money rewards and those types of things. Ultimately, if we've done our job as a business, we're convincing people internal, like intrinsic motivation of wanting to go to the dentist because they know the benefits, they know what the outcome is, and they want that, and we want to be able to give them that.
And I think you're already starting to tease it. You talked about survey and talking to customers. What does your process look like in terms of, I guess, doing growth or trying to get those patients to come into to book meetings with their dentists? Like, what would be your process looking like to see what's going to work and what's not going to work?
Yep. So I think one of the things we really try to do is like, number one, how do we collect as much information as we can? But number two, also, how do we make decisions with the best information that we have? And those two, you're not always going to have perfect information, but I think there's always things that you can be collecting, always things that will help kind of help you make better decisions. And then you need to also be executing because, you know, there's no infinite cash flow at a startup. You know, you need to make sure that you're doing things today with the best information that you have. So in terms of ways of collecting information, like I mentioned, there's surveys and research that you can be doing. I feel like a lot of startups look to like SurveyMonkey to run surveys, but being able to run the right surveys, collect the right information, I think is critical for us. I think we ended up spending 10 grand in Toronto alone just surveying the Toronto population to understand behaviors interacting with healthcare, interacting with dental care. Gives us a much better understanding of like, how do we actually size this market? What's the overall opportunity? And without that information, it's hard for you to really understand the universe that you're playing in and, you know, whether you're maxing out the potential in a market or whether you're just scratching the surface. How do you know that information if you start very tactical and only looking at ideas? So research is one piece. I think customer interviews, but not like your 15-minute customer interviews, but really like I think we've really valued the jobs to be done framework and going into really kind of like dark and dirty stories of people and like their interactions with health. Like you get into like some serious conversations with people when they're like
traumatizing.
Yeah. It's like, you know, this one time when I went to the dentist and he really like mistreated me and, you know, I ended up losing all these teeth and I didn't have to lose all of them. And you get into those details, you start to understand like, why do people have such negative attitudes towards going to the dentist? When you have that information, it makes it a lot easier. Even though it's still hard, it makes it easier for you to market to them because you're starting to understand their point of view, et cetera. So I think those are places to collect information. But really, like, the next step is, like, how do you translate those pieces of information into, like, actual work and those types of things? And so I think it starts for us with looking at funnels and really trying to build, you know, everything in a business can resemble a funnel. I think in, like, paid marketing, it's really obvious when you have like impression all the way to action.
Right.
You can have all the different steps in a funnel. And in a sales org, you can have sort of like a very clear funnel as well. Being able to measure that and benchmarking it against what is natural or what perhaps like really high performing companies have at those specific funnel metrics allows you to kind of see like, this is the opportunity for us to grow at this specific point in the funnel. And when we look at that, that helps us kind of pick specific areas that we need to focus our time because that's going to yield the biggest impact. Now it's starting to kind of like go from this big universe to slowly narrowing it down into like specific places where it's much more valuable for you to brainstorm ideas.
Nice.
If you start broad and you're like, let's talk about ideas, you get lost on a whiteboard because there's just so many different ways you can approach it. So you need sort of like a process to help you identify specific parts of the funnel that you need to be focused on.
Nice.
And then from there, it's like, you know, your typical stack rank, looking at like impact, evidence, looking at effort, those types of things to generally score and help you prioritize your tasks and those types of things.
And what does the funnel look like for the patient side? Is that something you can share or like
it's... Yeah, so I've actually just recently been thinking about this.
So nice. This helpful. Is great. But
for us, if we look at sort of the demand side of the business, it starts with your total addressable market. So again, like only research is going to be able to help you define those things better. But from there, how many of those people are you reaching? So we can take a look at, you know, different types of data points to give us an understanding of, are we actually reaching everybody in our market? If not, maybe that's an opportunity. From there, it's like, from the people that we've reached, how many of them have actually consciously become aware of open care as a brand or open care as a category to help solve for your dental needs? So that's sort of the next step. So it goes from total addressable market to reach to awareness. Then there's some sort of engagement metric. So, you know, as the customer, you become aware of open care, decided to take some sort of action. And as you go down the funnel, it becomes clearer, more easy to measure. And then ultimately, there's like some action at the end that you care about. From our side, it's new patients. And so breaking that out gives us more clarity in terms of like, oh, well, we're reaching all these people, but they're not aware of open care. Well, there's a set of things that we can work on. Or, you know, we're not even reaching them in the first place. So what are other ways that we can reach them? So that's really been a helpful framework that we've applied recently across every team at Open Care. It's really helped us prioritize, organize.
Nice. There's something that you said really early on that I like, wow, that's great. You were talking about like really getting to know them, the customer, when you're doing interviews. Yep. And like spending so much money on surveys. I think what you guys did really well, what you did really well with that was empathizing. Like the word empathy is such a big thing, knowing who your users and how to market to them, right?
Yeah. And I think the modern day growth marketer thinks of things very much in terms of data and like tools, and sitting behind a screen and running A/B tests is really like the modern day growth marketer. And really, like, if you look back at how marketers became marketers in the first place, a lot of it is focused on the customer, talking to the customer, really understanding their pain points. I don't think people do that enough.
That's really fascinating. I've been chatting with one of my buddies about how people have become so much data driven that they've lost focus of the insights, the empathy, and like the humanness of what we do as marketers.
Right. It's sort of like the way I describe it, it's almost like this huge pendulum swing. So when you go and you think about sort of like the way that marketers did things 20 years ago or however long, it was all about brand marketing.
Right.
It was all about customer research. It was all about doing all these huge surveys. But I think the critique against them was that, you know, you weren't making decisions based on data. You weren't measuring performance. And so the pendulum swings to the other side. And now people are like, man, everything is about data. Everything's about LTV. Everything's about ROI. We need to be able to track everything or else it's not worth doing. And I think that's where a lot of startup mentality is right now, is like everything has to be trackable. You know, I think the sweet spot is really in the middle, instead of like pendulum swinging to the other side. Like, how can you take the best of both sides and have that as, I guess, cornerstones of how you do marketing?
And there's so much tension. I guess not tension, it's almost like a rope, like a pendulum. I see like rope, it's being pulled in both ways.
Yeah.
And just finding that right balance. Would you say you found the balance here at Open Care, or would you say you're too data driven or more like too?
Absolutely. So awareness is good, but I think our team, even though we're trying to kind of bring in these other aspects, you know, my background is performance marketing at UKen. All we did was LTV, everything. And that's great. Predictive analytics tells you like how much that user is going to be worth to you. So you're very like down in the numbers, and everything you do is driven by numbers. So I would say even like more beyond me and just kind of looking at our team, it's a challenge to venture out into areas where it's more difficult to measure. When you talk about brand or you talk about PR, like most marketers or growth people kind of run away from those things. You're like, I don't know how to measure this. But then you look at like successful companies even today that are able to leverage it and able to kind of expand their tool set in terms of like how they measure. It's not just like direct conversions and things like that. And they're seeing a lot of value by investing in these things, right? Even like TV or like out of home campaigns. Like, I think there's a time and place and there's value in it. And we're potentially cutting it short because we're saying we can't measure. So let's stay online. Let's stay in like these channels that we can just track everything from beginning to end.
This is something that I've been thinking a lot about too, is that maybe instead of being data driven, we should be more insight driven. So the insight would encompass taking the data and taking the qualitative side and driving something, like you said something earlier too, something that would do something upon it, so something actionable, right?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting way to approach it. It's like, I think insights ultimately are what matters, right? And I guess taking a look at the data, Yeah, insights can be from data, but they can also be from like all these other things, all these different tools that you can collect information and insight.
How do you not get lost in the data? I know you're in performance marketing. I love getting into Google Analytics. Like, I just become like a little child in a candy store when I see analytics. But all too often, you're like, oh man, that's cool. That thing is cool. What are things that you do to make sure, like, oh, I'm looking for insights, particularly that you don't get lost in all the beautiness of the numbers?
Yeah. And we're still like that too, you know, like we have reports that we're refreshing every day. You launch a new campaign, you're pressing that refresh button until it goes up, right? You're like, please let this work. So we're still like that. I think like some practical things, it comes back to like thinking about customers instead of numbers, right? It's like when you think about what they're feeling or the challenges that they have, the problems that they're facing, I think it almost forces you to think more about insights than just about numbers.
Yeah.
It's almost like backwards to kind of like do analysis on something and then try and tease insights out on it. It's like, how do we kind of at least take a step back and think, you know, what are they actually thinking, feeling? I think that helps you kind of frame things in the right way. But yeah, it's still a challenge.
Not sure. I took a UX part-time class at Red Academy, and you're sounding a lot like a user researcher, like a user experience designer. Is that something you've purposely thought about, or you just started like, oh, this is something we should be doing?
So we have like really great user researchers here, user experience. Like I've had the pleasure of working with like some really talented people who've had to think about these things. And I see like a lot of similarities and ways to kind of like take what they're doing when kind of deeper product level and really kind of bring it up to the marketing side of things. And I think I don't see them as like different roles. I see them as like, what do we need to do to be effective in terms of marketing?
Right.
And how can you not kind of go through the same steps of like research and really like, you know, design sprints or whatever it is, like all these different things that they're doing, really help marketers become more effective at marketing.
That makes sense. It does really make sense. I know you're like looking to blow up your team here at OpenCare. You're actively hiring and you're paying people some referral fees, like $2,000 to $5,000.
So I think it's 2 for more junior roles, right. 5 for more intermediate roles.
2 for junior roles. What does your ideal team, if you had to create like a SWOT growth team, like, you know, not necessarily names, but like here's kind of skills I would like to have in my team that I know that I don't have. What would like your ninja growth team, and then they can do whatever they want, any growth problems they need to solve, they'll have.
So in terms of my ideal team, I think it's able to really balance what we're talking about in terms of this whole pendulum thing, right? So I think by nature, you're going to have people who think of things more from the brand side. You have people who are going to think about things more from the performance side. And it's really kind of like healthy dialogue between those and making sure that like they're keeping each other in check. And so I think it's really important to have those perspectives. I think like this idea of cross-functional is really important as well. So having, you know, a dedicated analyst, a dedicated designer, but really like, you know, you should be able to solve problems in one single unit. So whether that includes an engineer, it really depends on your business. Really thinking about like, okay, well, if we have this problem that we want to solve, like, do we have everything on our team to solve it?
Oh, that makes sense.
Cool.
He doesn't know it. You're like, oh, did I answer?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good answer.
No, that was a good answer. I think at the end of the day, you'd want a team, like you said, that would solve the problem. And one thing that I'm finding also is a team that can find the right problem to solve.
Yeah.
I think there's so many problems out there, even business-wise, like looking at the funnel, you can be like, oh, I can focus on this and this.
Right. And so when you're going back to insights, for instance, right, like how do you make sure that there's a healthy flow of new insights that are coming in? Absolutely, you need people that are thinking about, you know, what are the new things that we're working on? What are problems that people are facing that we're not currently solving? And how do we collect more and more evidence to justify the rest of the team kind of working and doing that type of stuff? It goes back to like some of the research stuff I've been talking about. So can we find ways to more regularly do those types of activities so that, you know, once we're done solving this problem, there's a healthy list of things for us to be looking at, a healthy list of things for us to be, you know, let's pick this one over this one because either it's easier to do or we think it's going to have a bigger impact on our numbers or it's going to, or let's say we have the most evidence to solve for it. So again, I think it's like the standard sort of stack rank stuff, but.
And you said something that is fascinating. You said you want to accelerate in gaining insights. Like, so it's doing the right activities, but to the point now that you want to
maybe do it more often or do it quicker?
Yeah, I think when you start as a business, you have certain assumptions that you need to kind of go through and validate, invalidate, et cetera. And as you go through it, if you have the process in place, you're collecting better information as you go. You're learning more about whether this assumption was right or wrong.
Right.
And the ideal state is that you're making better and better decisions as you go, yes. Right? You're almost like starting with, you know, these shotgun approaches where, you know, anything sticks, let's look there, to really kind of getting in really, really close and being much more precise with things that you're running. So the activities should ultimately get more efficient as you go. Obviously, lots of failure in right. growth, and you have to run all these experiments. But the learning aspect of that is really kind of like you take that, you figure out ways to make sure that your next decisions are more accurate, et cetera. So
that makes sense. And it goes back to that process you talked about collecting data and like looking into it.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of advice for people who's trying to get into growth, you've had a really fascinating career progression, jumping into a startup and then getting into UK Games, which is yeah. huge. And then now you're another rocket ship called OpenCare. Yeah. What would be some of your advice for people doing marketing or data or mathematics in university right now or college?
Yep. So I think we sort of touched on this at the beginning, but I think being adaptable and thriving on change are like, to me, that's really, really important. Going back to like, you know, what you're learning in school is like way too slow. You know, picking up hard skills is way too slow. You know, the amount of time it takes for you to like learn Facebook, if all you're doing is learning Facebook, tomorrow is not going to be Facebook.
Yeah, right.
So how do you really kind of like, I think the successful marketer is able to think about things as like the problem solver, mm-hmm. as like, here are some frameworks I can use to really like help me think about the world and think about my marketing. And that allows you to be much more adaptable to certain situations as you evolve, right? If you go from, let's say, a consumer-driven business to, you know, some sort of SaaS business, like you can still take those frameworks with you and succeed. I think, again, like channels, for instance, the channels are always going to change, right? So how do you actually not just like be adaptable, but like live on that, right? How do you like want to kind of adapt as the environment around you is adapting? So I think that's one thing. I'm trying to think of some others. This theme around being adaptable or not adaptable, being balanced. So like really seeking to like not just be the data-driven person, but to kind of look at the other perspective. If you find yourself more on the data side and like really performance marketing side, like how do you kind of balance that out and start thinking about things more from the consumer perspective? How do you like force yourself to do more interviews? Because the first time you do an interview is going to be really crap. You know, you're going to ask all these leading questions or whatever yeah. that don't really do much. And how do you kind of like train that side of your brain and get yourself kind of caught up there? So this idea of like really trying to arrive at balance, I think like that's where like the successful marketing leaders are. Like they're able to bridge that thing. I'm trying to think of some others. I guess this is also an outcome of like process, but I hear it a lot. It's like people saying like, let's just test it.
Yeah, I hear
let's
that
just
a lot.
Test it, right?
Let's just test that, right.
So I think this idea of being purposeful is also important. Really knowing like why you're doing things and not just doing it because someone else is doing it. I think I wrote an article about this actually, like I think a year ago, but really about like making the right decisions is much more important than moving really, really quickly and doing a lot of random shit. So I think the idea of being purposeful, it's like, why are you actually doing this?
Right.
And I don't know if we always like stop and think about that long enough to, and sometimes it feels like, you know, there's this stress, there's this pressure to perform, you're not hitting targets, so you're like, fuck, let's just do everything.
Yeah.
Let's just do this, like, let's do like, okay, this month we're going to do like LinkedIn, Pinterest, we're going to do all these other channels or whatever it is. And that creates like almost this sense of like, you're rushing through things or that stress doesn't necessarily lead to results.
Right.
And I think sometimes it's more important to like take a step back and say like, okay, well, what are the biggest assumptions that we have right now that we need to go and validate? Right.
Right.
How do we actually like really think things through and not just kind of jump into running because you could be running in the wrong direction?
That's so true, man. It's all about like letting insights guide what you're doing, right? Like you have the why to the how and the what. A lot of people are just, and that's what I find in startups. Startup I work with is like, oh, the pressure's from the investors and they're like, oh, you're not hitting your targets. And then now we got to look busy. Still we'll do a bunch of shit. Like,
yeah. Or it's even like at the company level, it's like, what business are you in? Right. And I feel like a lot of people can't even answer that question, right? It's like, for instance, like, let's say a lot of times when you think about your business and the value that you're actually providing, it's not actually the as obvious as you think it might be. You know, instead of selling clothing, you're actually selling something else. Maybe you're selling, you know, a lifestyle or whatever it is, right? I think taking the time to like think through those important questions and like always, again, taking new information that you have and adjusting your viewpoint, you know, really comes back to like understanding thinking instead of just like rushing in and doing things.
So good. I'd like to wrap this up. If you have any promotions, like, you know, where can people find Open Care? Do you write? Where can people find your blogs?
If you need a dentist right now, we're offering, you know, $50 gift cards for going to the dentist.
Nice.
Again, I haven't been able to convince myself, but I should go. We have some really high quality dentists on our platform who really care about their patients. So
where can you go?
www.opencare.com, and you can find a dentist. You can search anywhere in the GTA.
And how about yourself, Peter? Like, do you have any blog posts, LinkedIn?
I haven't written in a year.
Is there anything you want to promote, like your dog? Is any promotion, anything else?
No, I'm good.
Okay, but last call. You don't want to share your Twitter account or...
Do not go on my Twitter because there's a bunch of really embarrassing stuff on there. So.
All right, man. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate you spending your Friday afternoon
Thanks for stopping
here.
By.
All right, take care.
Hey, thanks for listening on this episode. One of the quotes that Peter said that I really love is that when everything you do as a marketer is driven by numbers, it's a challenge to venture out into where it's harder to measure things. Most growth marketers run away from brand and PR because it's hard to measure. And it's something that I found with myself, with having a data and math background, it's really hard to start thinking about how brand and PR can really be added to my toolbox as a marketer. Something that you have to think about. Well, thanks so much again for listening. If you want a high-level outline and quotes from this episode, you can go to growthmarketing.today/009. As always, if you liked it, please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also sign up for our Insider Club community at Growth Marketing Today to get the latest news, the next episode, even before anybody gets it. And you can join our members-only Slack community as well. If you have any feedback or questions, or you just want to say hi, I don't bite, send me a short email at ramley@growthmarketingtoday. In next week's episode, I chat with Desmond Choi, who is growth at Diamond. This is Ramley from Growth Marketing Today, and don't stop growing.